start testimony, having passed the time that we said we'd start and having at least three people in the room. We'll start with the people who have asked to speak on the bill. And we're going to start with Thomas Howes from the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, which was something that we've added to the bill. Thank you. Mr. Howes.
Good morning, or good afternoon, I should say. Thank you for giving me some of your time. Briefly run through our project with you, just to highlight it. Is my mic not working very well? We're good?
Okay.
Again, this is a project up in St. Louis County in northern Minnesota on the Fond du Lac Reservation. Its chief purpose is to purchase property, put it into conservation, and allow public access. And so on your monitors, you can see a few little brief snippets of the landscape. But it's essentially two things. One is what we call a priority parcel, which is 440 acres that completely surrounds an 80-acre lake. It's an undeveloped property, but it is up for sale. And we'd like to see it remain intact and keep the landscape intact for the obvious reasons of conservation. And beyond that is another 280 acres downstream of that in the riparian corridor that we'd like to talk to landowners about potentially purchasing those as well. This is just a brief look at the Fond du Lac Reservation proper and where the project area is. It's outlined. This is the proximity of the project to neighboring cities, small town of Cloquet and Scanlon and Carlton and Thompson. Just to give you a sense of our long-term vision with this is that allowing access to the folks from those communities to recreate there. This here is the two project areas I spoke of. The area highlighted in green is the priority parcel. And as I said before, it completely surrounds what we call Simon Lake. It was once a farmstead, but there is no other development on there than now there's a foundation and the leftover fields from that operation. And then the areas downstream that are highlighted in yellow are the areas that we're looking at potentially purchasing. The areas in orange are parcels that the Fond du Lac Band already owns, and we were just showing how those would all tie together. Outside of these, there's quite a bit of other land to the west and south that the band also owns, and so it would be a very large contiguous area that would be undeveloped and in conservation. This is the real driver behind the idea of the project, is this parcel. I've been going there for many years in my work and always enjoyed that part of my work week because it's just a beautiful place. This is the varied habitats and types of things that we would work on as part of our proposal on the Fond du Lac Band's contribution to the project. Would be prairie restoration of the hay fields, so some prescribed burning and things. There's brushland component to it that would be mowed down and converted to an oak savanna. And then the forested areas would be thinned of the aspen growth and converted more to an oak and white pine type mixed hardwood forest. And the wetlands on the property have been slightly altered, so we would do about 21 acres, I believe, of restoration and another 30 acres of enhancement there by some hydrology changes. And then real briefly, just a few photos of this is the outlet of the lake going down. And it's just a small stream that leads to the St. Louis River. And this is from that same position, just 180 degrees looking back at the lake. And I believe this is looking off to the east. Yeah. This is a look at some of the prairie type field component of the property. Looking then 180 degrees again, looking down at the lake. And that's all I have for is show and tell for you. It's been an interesting process, and I appreciate your time.
Okay. I have a couple of questions. First of all, I know that this was before the Lesard-Sams Commission. I think the second time, wasn't it defeated by one vote or something like that? Pretty close, I thought. What?
It was up for a vote. I don't recall the exact count, but yeah.
So okay.
I made a couple hearings and a couple of visits to, so getting familiar with your room.
Yes. Now, in this case, we've put this over a two-year allocation. Does that give you a problem with what you want to do?
No, I think it's workable. The priority parcel would have to be some type of negotiation with the landowner as far as a purchase agreement kind of thing, but I just want to see the property stay intact, so that would be my approach with it.
Okay. Any other questions of Mr. House? Mr. Green, Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you get this parcel of land, how much would that mean in lost property tax revenue for the county?
The county, I believe it's minor. I mean, I'm sure to them maybe it's not. I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $2,000 or less a year that they gain from it.
Okay. Is there, Madam Chair, is there anything that you know of in the way of property tax reimbursement that's going to go to the county from this?
Not that I'm aware of.
Mr. House. Okay.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Mr. Green.
This wasn't a recommendation from Lesard-Sams. Have you contacted Lesard-Sams on this year for this?
No, my intention was, since it wasn't successful the first time through, was I was going to resubmit it, but was asked to come back and talk about it again. So,
okay,
that was my intention.
And then, because of my own faults here, I haven't dug into this too quick. I was just browsing over it when I first saw it, but. All the money now, you're seeking all the money from Legacy, or is there other funds involved?
All the money, the 2.4 and change for the property acquisition is what would be great to have that. And then the other contributions to that are our staff time over the next 5 years to do all of the enhancements and management of the property.
Okay.
So that's amounts to, I believe, $557,000 is what was in the proposal.
Okay, and what is the acreage then that's going to be purchased, and is there acreage that's going to go into easements at the same time, so there will still be some revenue coming in from that?
No, the whole thing would be purchased to be, ideally, would be the 720 acres is in the proposal if we're able to acquire them all. The priority parcel that I talked about in and of itself is 440 acres. The whole properties then would be, the band would seek to do is put those into trust with the federal government, but still allowing access to everyone for recreation. But as far as purchasing conservation easements, there wouldn't be any of that. That wasn't in the proposal. As part of the band's land use policy, all of this would be undevelopable because of its proximity to wetlands and the lakeshore. And so that's the way it would stay, is the way it is. Except that we would do these enhancements to the habitat.
Okay. Just one more question.
Okay, sure.
So the band wants to acquire the land, but they're not sticking any of their own money into it. Is that what you're telling me?
For the acquisition, no. For the management of it, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and. This is a interesting project, and Representative McNamara and I were on Lesard-Sams, and so we heard quite a bit about it. So if folks want to know, I'm one of the folks that voted no for it at first, and then later we had another opportunity. I voted yes, so that's being a consistent politician I am. But Mr. Howes and his group have just always been straightforward and honest, and came with information that was helpful. And one of the things I'd like members to know about this project is that I didn't really know at first is the educational component, that you're pretty close to major cities. You kind of said that, but one of the things that you are talking about doing is bringing a lot of kids out there, and I know that's the chair's goal in what she wants to see done with a lot of this bill. But if you could just take a couple seconds and tell about that, because I think that's really the so often with these Lessard Sam's projects, you don't really hear the added value. There's a lot of partners, and I look around the room, but they bring in a lot of, you know, Lessard Sam's funds them, but then they have a lot of, like Pheasants Forever or something, have a lot of volunteer hours that comes out and does something, or volunteer hours, and to make the, there's that compounding factor, if you will. So there's other things in this project, and I just want to give you hats off for, I think you were willing to work through the process next year and see what happens, but I think there was Denny, or Representative McNamara and myself, kind of saw the merits of the project, you know, in the end, and it just the votes weren't there. But if you could kind of tell us a little bit of your story about the kids and some of the work and that you plan to do with it.
Yeah, we see it as being useful to those small communities there, but also for the Fond du Lac Band. We have our own school system, but that's what we see it as, is more of a having interpretive trails of sorts and having access for school groups and being sort of an outdoor classroom type of a scenario, because it has such varied habitat. We thought it would be a really rich experience for school kids. It's really close, so it's not going to be hard for those groups to reach it. So in a nutshell, that's our intention. We planned on putting an archery range in there because it's sort of a training kind of thing for people and for the local communities to use as well. So,
okay. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My memory is leaving me right now, and I was tardy. But could you tell me, is this land part of the ceded land of 1854 treaty?
Well, yeah, technically, yeah. The 1854 treaty ceded lands and established reservations, right? And so in that treaty, the Fond du Lac Reservation was established, and this sits inside it. So this is not only ceded territory, but it's also within the reservation proper.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Murphy, continuing? Or okay. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. House, good to see you again, and thank you for coming back. I just wanted to, you mentioned kind of a follow-up also to Representative Murphy's question. This is in the reservation, not only in the ceded territory, but within your reservation boundaries. Is there very much private property actually located within the reservation? Is that, do you happen to know, like a rough percentage of the land within the reservation that's private?
Private is roughly 50%. About 20% is various county and state land, and 30% of it is the Fond du Lac Band.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. House, you did allude to that there are some state public lands in there. But because it's within your reservation, does it fall within your authority to allow the band to hunt, gather, fish under your guidelines and your law? Excuse me, you refer to them as laws, you do, don't you?
Yeah.
Thank you. So the band can follow those, that which can be somewhat different, and that was agreed upon in the treaty, and we respect that, and the Supreme Court has upheld that. Are you allowed to, on the state land, also to hunt and gather and fish that per those rules and laws that you have established?
Yes, exactly. So the band has its own codes and ordinances for hunting, fishing, gathering, and those would apply on all lands within the reservation, and then there are codes outside of the reservation for the ceded territory of 1854 and 37 that are also applicable to public lands and for tribal members.
Madam Chair, I think along with Representative Lilly, we had reservations, and I don't think we had all the information when we first voted on this in Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage, and I believe it's a project that does deserve funding this year. I think it's a project that we should be looking at a model that would put it within the wildlife management areas. I know that that's not one, Mr. House, that you support as a first option, but I wish and hope that you will continue to consider that Because that I think would allow, you alluded to, there's I believe 30% private property within the reservation, and we may have additional willing sellers in the future that are interested in allowing that land to be protected, which I think is your number one goal, that it's a great opportunity to protect this land. And I think it would be more consistent if we were to move it into the wildlife management area program and allow you to continue to operate under the rules and ordinances and laws that you've established in your reservation. So I look forward to continuing to work with you. And am I recollecting it correctly that the immediate need with this parcel is 1.7 just for the acquisition?
Of the priority parcel, that's the asking price, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions or... thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Okay, the next person on our list is Peggy Ladner from the Nature Conservancy. Ms. Ladner.
Thank you, Chairwoman Kahn and members of the committee. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Why don't you start by saying your name into
sure.
the tape.
Peggy Ladner, Director of the Nature Conservancy in Minnesota. Thank you to the committee, and thank you very much for your important oversight role. We appreciate the additional scrutiny of the projects, and we appreciate your support of the Nature Conservancy and our projects in particular. On behalf of the Nature Conservancy, I would like to ask you to reconsider the two-year time frame that the D1 amendment proposes and return to the recommendations of the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council for approving funds on an annual basis. Now, as Representative Kahn knows, I visited with her in her office in February, and she told me of her plan to change the funding cycle from annual to biannual. I said I'd think about this change in light of the project submitted by the Nature Conservancy. And I've come to the conclusion that the biennial appropriations will not work well for us and will hamper our ability to get the best conservation results. Now, I realize that sounds counterintuitive, but let me explain. The single most important reason that I support annual appropriations of the Outdoor Heritage Funds is my responsibility to the Nature Conservancy as its director for our Minnesota program. I am right now in the midst of what I not so fondly refer to as budget madness at the Nature Conservancy. One of the realities of the nonprofit world is that we incur very significant unreimbursed costs in the course of implementing Outdoor Heritage Fund projects. These additional funds costs must be covered by private funds. Moving to the process of a biennial appropriation requires me to obligate the Nature Conservancy prior to knowing that those additional private funds are in hand, and I don't think that's prudent. So that's my number one concern. In addition, our approach at the Nature Conservancy is and always has been a collaborative, partnership-based approach to conservation. In the case of the Prairie Recovery Project, we have multiple partners that we meet with on a regular basis, both in the nonprofit world and in terms of agency partners in developing our conservation plans. Our goal is to get the best possible outcomes and to assure that our activities are complementary and not duplicating the work of others. We hold an annual planning meeting with these partners to inform our work plan prior to submitting a proposal to the Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council for their review and consideration. So again, Representative Kahn and committee members, I thank you for proposing the additional funding. I thank you for the support of our projects. But by extending the one-year funding we requested to a second year, I can't at this time commit the Conservancy will be able to cover our financial obligations, and we don't have currently in place a two-year conservation work plan that's been developed. So for the Conservancy, the annual process works well for us to develop a stronger proposal in collaboration with our key partners, and we think we'll get better conservation results on the ground. Now, as you well know, because we have talked previously, the Conservancy's been very appreciative of the thorough review process of the Outdoor Heritage Council. They've brought considerable conservation expertise to the process. Their priority has been to assure that the Outdoor Heritage Funds are used for strategic long-term investments. And with those investments, we are protecting Minnesota's natural heritage for future generations. The last thing I want to note is that the amendment includes funding for projects that were not recommended by the council, along with several that never engaged in the review process. I'm concerned that to bypass the process that was followed and relied upon by the grant applicants and the public could call into question the transparency and the fairness of the Outdoor Heritage Fund process. So we do encourage you to support the recommendations of the Outdoor Heritage Council. Thanks very much again for your service, your dedication to preservation and restoration of habitat through the Outdoor Heritage funding.
Okay. Well, Ms. Ladner, first of all, I would interpret much of what you were saying as being in support of a biennial budget, because your effort to work on it would be cut in half, you know, and one of the reasons I've said, first of all, you know, why haven't you come to the legislature before and asked us to have all of our environmental funding on an annual basis, if you think that that makes sense? Then the, as I might have said to you, I've said again and again, part of my background for doing this is that before I was in the legislature, I supported myself on grants. And I do know that a multiple-year grant is very, very much easier than a single-year grant, even if there's a review process in between. But the other thing that's a little puzzling is that you asked $3,775,000. So I assume you thought you could raise that within 1 year. The Lesard Sams gave you $2.75 million, and we gave you all of it, but in the second year. So I don't understand how that interferes with your fundraising ability. I'm sure that you have the ability to put the money aside and to use it in the second year, and if you think you want more in the second year, again, there's more both in our baseline budgets and also in the Lesard Sam's budget for additional funding. So it's very confusing with what you said when you asked almost $4 million, and now you seem to be satisfied with less than $3 million. So it's very that means that we couldn't trust what you said the first time.
Now, let me try to explain it, and it is confusing. I completely acknowledge that. Let me take your questions maybe not in quite the same order, just because I think it will flow in terms of the rationale here. I couldn't agree with you more, Representative Kahn, that when you're doing private fundraising, having a multi-year commitment from an individual or an institutional funder is ideal, because then you've got the ability to put a project in motion and continue it for a period of time. I'm referring specifically to public grants, and public grants where the nonprofit, in our case the Nature Conservancy, has substantial unreimbursed cost. And so the council staff has worked with us very closely to try to address some of that, and some of that can be addressed through direct billing, not all of it. So we put in a proposal. Once we knew what the recommendation was, then we budgeted per the amount of money that we knew we were going to have to cover. Also, I want to be clear.
Excuse me.
Certainly.
Completely clear.
Certainly.
You didn't know what the recommendation was until the legislature acted. So I don't understand how you thought you knew what the recommendation was.
Well, all I can tell you is I'm in the budget process now. I have done an analysis of our public funding through the Outdoor Heritage Fund. I recognize that because we have both capital costs that are requested as well as operating costs that are requested, because we're doing a combination of acquisitions, easements, management, restoration, all of those activities. A slice of that work is operations-based funding for which we have unreimbursable costs. And so I'm just saying that it does make it a management challenge. More as important, though, we also have the opportunity and the desire to work very cooperatively with multiple partners. We meet regularly with those partners. We want the flexibility to be able to adapt to changing conditions and to be able to look at those work plans for our conservation activities on an annual basis. I mean, I gave this a lot of thought because you really had me intrigued with your suggestion when we sat down and talked about it in February. And I went back and looked at both the financial commitment side, I looked at the conservation work plan side, I looked at the way that we try to implement our activities, and I came to the conclusion that if you're asking my opinion, I'm trying to share it from an organization that has been extremely grateful for the support of the Outdoor Heritage funding. I do think for us at the Nature Conservancy, it will work better if we have the opportunity to develop our work plans on an annual basis, to submit our proposals and make plans on an annual basis for the commitments and the obligations that we have, both staff time, financially, and in terms of the work outcomes.
You still haven't answered my question.
Okay.
My question was your original proposal when you asked the $3,775,000, was that not well thought out, and did you not think you could deal with that commitment, which, and that project goes through October 2015, and you didn't think that you could do that when you submitted the project?
The Root River proposal is the one that you're referencing, where we had requested over almost $3.8 million. That project, Representative Kahn, is primarily focused on acquisition and easements in concert with Minnesota Land Trust as well as the Department of Natural Resources. In that particular case, because the emphasis is primarily on acquisition and easements, we have an easier time, and we would have been thrilled to have been given recommendation of the full funding, you know, at the get-go, and we had fewer operating costs to consider going forward.
But
I was spending more of my time focusing on the prairie recovery project, which you and I had talked about.
Well, but this is the one,
previously.
You know, I mean, what puzzles me is how could you ask for that amount and now tell us you object to getting that amount because you can't handle that unless you come in and ask for it again. I just don't understand it, because we're giving you what you originally asked for.
I was really referring much more heavily to
the prairie
recovery project.
I'm sorry. I should have made it clearer.
And I've confused
that which
you,
project.
Yeah.
Which project I was talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're not. I still haven't gotten the answer. Was that request for $3,775,000 not well thought out, and you did not think you could make it when you made the request?
No, I think it was well thought out, and I think there was good collaboration with our public and private partners on it. I think that the project very much worthy of public funding. I think the opportunity for protection of very unique natural areas in a critical watershed to the Root River, which is a key tributary to the Mississippi River, I think it's a very, very worthwhile project. And I think the process that the Conservancy used was a good one. So I'm not trying to second-guess that. I'm just saying that one of the factors that we need to consider as a nonprofit organization is particularly when there are operating costs associated with these proposals.
Well, I still haven't gotten the answer that you asked for a certain amount of money, we gave you that amount of money, spread over a longer period of time, and yet you tell us you can't do it because you can't deal with something that comes over 2 years instead of 1 year when the project was supposed to go until 2016, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I still, maybe everyone else in the committee understands it, but, you know, maybe you can then privately explain it to me at some point. If everyone else understands it, I apologize for my denseness. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for coming, Michael Slatter.
Thank you.
You do some amount of prairie restoration work.
Correct.
Jean, would you pull the microphone?
Sorry. The Nature Conservancy does some amount of prairie restoration work.
Yes, we do. That's correct.
When we were on LCCMR, and you have gotten LCCMR money.
Yes, we have.
We quit funding prairie restoration at 1 year or 2 years because we understood that it takes 5 years easily to restore a prairie. You cannot restore a prairie. You can do the first year, you're probably killing the weeds, maybe even 2 years,
mm-hmm.
before you even do the planting.
Mm-hmm.
And establishing a prairie is extremely difficult if you're using either brome field or even a something that was a cornfield. So what we did in LCCMR was say that this money is available for 5 years for a certain project. And so it seems to me that year to year is going back to the old way when we know that most of this work is long-term work if it's going to be successful. Because what we were finding was that people would start a restoration project, maybe had 2 years of funding, didn't get funding, and then all that money went down the drain because they didn't do it in the third, fourth, and fifth year. So the appropriate way, I believe, is to fund projects for enough years to complete them. So to say that making a commitment over 2 years involves a high level of speculation and could it jeopardize our ability to successfully complete the project takes me back to many years ago when we decided that was not a good thing.
You make a lot of good points, Representative Wagenius, and I certainly agree with you that a prairie restoration project is a multi-year project. There's no question. And I think part of what's happening here in my confusing the committee, and I apologize for that as well, is we really do develop. We may have a long-term plan, and as you, I think, well know, we played a leadership role in development of a 25-year plan for prairie conservation in the state of Minnesota. One of our disappearing landscapes, one of the most precious parts of our outdoor heritage that we're losing. And that prairie plan calls for protecting the little remaining prairie, native prairie in the state, and working with both private and public landowners so that that remaining native prairie is managed well. It also calls for restoration of some of those areas that can be restored. Not the same as a virgin prairie, but still a very important prairie. So, yes, we do make plans that are long-term. I am sort of blending two issues here, okay? One, and it really is very project by project, Representative Wagenius. I'm not saying that we wouldn't put in proposals that could look at a multi-year commitment, particularly depending on the project. But I do know right now that one of the things I've been asking my staff to do is to evaluate the true costs of accepting public grants for work that we're doing across the landscape in Minnesota. And some of the work that we are doing does require considerable private funding to leverage that wonderful, terrific public investment. And so I recognize that we have to kind of look at it sort of project by project. I did make plans initially based on a multi-year we have made plans based on our long-term commitment to prairies. Okay. And I'm not saying there wouldn't be a project we couldn't support, and I do think the Root River is a better example than the Prairie Recovery Project, because with the Prairie Recovery Project, we are literally acquiring prairies from willing sellers. We are testing economic models for enhancing and managing those prairies. We are looking at the whole grassland system, and we are adapting on a year-by-year basis our work plans based on the work of multiple partners. It works extremely well for us to do that annual review. And when we put in, one big request, that has a mix of both, capital expenditures and operating expenditures. So I'm just saying I took the suggestion and the recommendation that Representative Kahn made to me. I took it back and I thought it through, and I'm back to say it is certainly the prerogative of this legislature to make those changes and those decisions. I'm here to offer our opinion as an organization that's been working over 50 years in the state of Minnesota in a variety of landscapes, including prairie, that at least in terms of our Prairie Recovery Project, we would value the opportunity to every year review our work plans, adapt them to the overall conservation framework we're involved in with our partners.
I'll let her proceed. She's sure she's going to say what I'm going to say, so I'll let her say it.
Okay. I can't see why we would give you money for a prairie recovery project unless it was going to cover the 5 years it took to recover the bird. It doesn't make sense to me to give you partial funding and then the rest of the funding doesn't come in and we lose that investment. Because any time you're working in a prairie, there are a couple of ways we could do it. And what you were citing is getting some prairie remnants. I was talking about a restoration.
I understand.
But if you get a remnant, you're going to have the same 5-6 years to restore the remnant. You're going to burn it 1 year and maybe just burn it every other year. I've watched DNR. Take a pasture from the 1960s where nothing was done except DNR came in and cut down the trees and then they burned it. 2 years later they burned it. 2 years later they burned it and the prairie came back. That seed bank in the soil, because it hadn't been turned over, that prairie came back. That is the highest level of restoration we can do for an old pasture. Now, that did not maybe have this same variety of species. Some of the species weren't
right
there.
Right.
But the prairie came back. And so
that's right.
It seems to me that any plan that we fund with public dollars should be funded over enough years to get the job done. I mean, that's my caution of going back to the old way, Representative Kahn.
Representative Ugenius, as you well know, because of our 50-plus year commitment to Minnesota prairies, the Nature Conservancy has a very extensive staff that is doing prairie both restoration and management on an ongoing basis. So I'm just really speaking to the opportunity on an annual basis to tweak those plans, to be able to adapt to changing conditions and the pieces that will require additional private funding to plan ahead for that. And so I'm not in any way suggesting that we don't have, I think it's very much borne out by our long history in the state and our long commitment of both prairie ownership, management, and in the more recent past, restoration, that we don't have a long-term commitment. I'm just really speaking to the ability with some of these projects to be able, I will always have that team of staff that are privately funded who will be able to do that kind of work. What we are able to enhance and leverage is the additional public money to extend that work and try some new models that I think may have tremendous, and already have shown tremendous benefit to the state of Minnesota. So,
well, part of our plan means that instead of shuffling papers in a second year, you will have more time to do that oversight tweaking of the plans, and the Lessard Sam's Commission will have more time to look at what you've done. And one of the reasons the legislature meets in annual sessions is that we have the ability to tweak plans that we've done. And I, you know, I haven't been on this committee before, but I was on LCMR for many years, and we very often did that. And, you know, I guess if I can give you one, hate to do, oh, Representative Murphy isn't here, so she can see me examining her, using her homework thing, I would just like you to go back to any of your private funders and ask, would they rather see a public commitment of dollars given to you over 1 year or 2 years, and ask them which one would make them more comfortable.
Sure.
And then come back
sure.
and tell us the answer.
Okay. Okay.
So,
very good.
Houseman.
Very good.
Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Because if she finds out, we could perhaps remove that second year of funding as a convenience.
If they don't want it, we certainly should, because we do have other places to put it.
Madam Chair, my question for the testifier. I'm reading. I listened carefully to the testimony and read the letter, and you speak much about the public vetting process of the council. You point out it was a process that was passed into law before voters considered the passage of the legacy amendment, which seems to suggest that somehow you believe the vote on the amendment was a vote on the council. And you believe that that is fair and transparent. I wonder what your view of the transparency and fairness of the legislative process is.
Okay. Well, clearly the legislative process is critical. And it is, I was actually very heartened by the fact that the legislature had the wisdom to set up an advisory council to, with a combination, a blend of both citizen experts and legislators, to provide the, you know, the guidance and the oversight, and to take the proposals, give them scrutiny, look at making strategic and long-term investments. So I thought the legislature was wise to do that. I know that initially in statute it was set up as an annual process, and I think that strengthened the recommendations that then come to the legislature. The legislature, of course, has oversight and the responsibility to approve those recommendations. And I think that's very important as well.
And Madam Chair, if I could just follow up. My sense of transparency is that absolutely, unless you're, you know, napping through the day, almost everybody knows when the legislature is in session.
Sure.
Huge absolutely. Attention. Our constituents write us. People come to testify. And people weigh in. You know, my sense of the Outdoor Heritage Council is, if you asked anyone on the street, virtually nobody other than a very small group of insiders even know that an Outdoor Heritage Council exists and when it meets and when it's considering anything. So in terms of transparency and fairness of a public process, I think you and I see such very different views of process and decision-making and spending of taxpayer money.
I was not in any way trying to suggest that the legislative process is not transparent. I'm simply saying that the council process has worked very well.
I thought, and Madam Chair, that if I'm reading this letter correctly, you're saying this isn't working. This decision isn't working. That you believe that a process that a council followed is, I mean, I don't know what other points you're making in this letter.
I'm really just making two points, I think. From our point of view, there is some benefit to an annual review and an annual submission of proposals. And I think the second point I was really trying to make in the letter is that the following the recommendations of the council is great. It's a good thing to do. Now, if the legislature sets up its own process and does not use the council, if it's the same thoughtful, rigorous process, that's the legislature's prerogative. Wow. I am speaking to the process that we have gone through. We supported the establishment of the council, and I've looked at governance structures, you know, and advisory councils in other states, and you all should feel very good about the fact that it's worked well.
Well, we do need to go on to have other people come up, but my conclusion from what you've said, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that we have given you, according to what your request was, about $3 million more than the Assad Sam's Council gave us. And your request to us is that we remove that and go back to what the Lasard Sam's Council gave you.
I don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth.
Well,
I'm just saying that we've got...
That's what your letter says. I just want to know. No. If that's not what your letter says, please correct it. If it is what your letter says, I would appreciate it if we'd go to your private funders and ask them if they think that's a good idea.
Okay. Very good.
Any other questions of Ms. Ladd? Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Next person we have is Lance Ness from the Fish and Wildlife, whatever it is. Lance, are you here?
Not here.
He had to step out for a few.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get back to him. Paul Bugby from the Crow River Watershed.
Hello.
Mr. Bugby.
Thank you for even calling me by name. I didn't know that I was on the list, but I know Representative Verdal put me on. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Could you please give your name for the record on tape, please?
Yeah, sorry. I'm Paul Bugby from Bugby Hive Resort, Painesville, Minnesota. Is that all you need?
Yep.
Okay, thanks. Well, I'm actually down here, Madam Chair and members of the committee, to testify across the hall, but I'd gotten a call this morning that this meeting was going on, and I'm passionate about aquatic invasive species in the state of Minnesota. Obviously, as a resort owner, I have a particular concern about it and its potential impact on tourism in the entire state. But I'm here today, when I got the call today, and I don't know fully what your agenda or plans are today, but my understanding is that you may be looking at some legacy funding for aquatic invasive species in Minnesota, specifically for some counties in the state. And I'm here today just to ask if you would perhaps open that up to a grant type process with a couple things in particular, and maybe this is already included and I won't take a lot of time here, but aquatic invasive species affect watersheds. They don't affect specific counties, as you probably know, and I'd like to see watersheds have that opportunity throughout the state, whether they're a formal watershed district or whether they're just the watershed, to be able to apply for some of those legacy grants. Representative Verdal and I have been in a lot of contact on this. He represents the area just south of Lake Coronas, where our resort is. But that's basically my request. I mean, I could talk for hours on aquatic invasive species, but I know that all of you are very familiar with the concerns that are out there and the threat that it poses to the state of Minnesota. And my final comment would be, as I've said to Representative Verdal, you know, what greater legacy than our lakes and our rivers and our water bodies for the state of Minnesota? And we need to pursue aggressive action to stop the spread of aquatic invasive species, not just to control it. And what better way to spend legacy funds than on that great legacy? Thank you.
Okay.
Any questions? No?
Thank you. Any questions? Representative McDonald.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, actually, this probably isn't germane to the discussion, but I just must say Paul. I was at Bugbee Resort. I got it through a donation to Love Inc., which is our group in Delano there to raise needs for those who need it and families. Anyway, thank you for that donation. It was a wonderful resort. My father, it was our last fishing trip with my father and my brothers and sons before my father passed away. We had a lovely time at your resort. It's only an hour away from the Twin Cities, an hour and a half. It's a great resort, and I just, I know it's not, we have more important matters before us, but I'd be remiss without compliment you on your staff and what a great resort, and I shall return.
Thank you so much. And I, again, of course, we want to protect Lake Cronus from aquatic invasive species, but we want to protect our entire state. So thanks. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Okay. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Bugbee, if you do need any pictures taken, I can find you a good photographer.
Madam Chair, well, might as well mention the name if you gave the plug like that.
Okay, I think we've had
McDonald.
Enough commercial advertisements for this part of the session. Is Mr. Ness back? Okay, well, anyone else want to talk, ask questions, converse? Anyone who signed up for tomorrow wants to start telling us what they're going to tell us tomorrow today, since some people may not be here tomorrow. Oh. Thank you. Identify who you are for the tape. And the
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Tim Spruck. I'm president of the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance. We represent about 400,000 sportsmen in the state of Minnesota through our 68 member groups. I'm here today to speak a little bit about this bill. I want to thank the council or the committee for taking the recommendations from the Lessard Council. It's very important that we continue to use those and take those recommendations and move forward, because their vetting process is exemplary and second to none. I do have a few concerns that I'd like to voice to the committee today. I'm not going to speak in opposition to the two-year funding cycle. However, I think it would be wise to make sure that that would be vetted through the council to make sure that they're able to work within that constraint. I'm concerned that there's some small grant applicants that may be left out of the process for next year. We also have concerns that, as I understand it, some funding appointments have been made for next year's cycle, which have not gone through the Lessard Council. I want to make sure that the committee understands that we have these concerns, but also that we also want to make sure that these dollars are spent wisely, and our primary concern is to make sure that they are available for hunting, fishing, and the taking of game. So I appreciate your time today, and I thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming, Mr. Sprock. And let me just make something maybe that isn't quite clear enough. The first thing is there is like something like $33 million still on the table. So specifically, understanding that these 2 years would be a transition year. So there's plenty of work for the council to do, and that possibly would encourage small grants, because the larger ones will probably have been funded in this year's process. And so that we did leave that open. We did take every recommendation from them. Some of the places where they deviated was just extending the going more along with the request that came from groups like yours, as specifically when there was language in their actions that showed that they intended to continue these things for multiple years. And as I said to Ms. Ladner, we intend that by getting rid of the paperwork of multiple filing years, that we're going to leave more time for active oversight and for tweaking of projects. So I hope it works.
But Madam Chair, I appreciate that. I just want to make sure that in this, assuming that this is the direction the council or the committee intends to go, I want to make sure that we don't have a hole between now and the implementation of it where projects are not able to be considered and that we are funding projects that don't have council approval.
And the other problem was, you know, I know because of the way the legislature changed and the way committees, you know, I'm totally new to this committee, so, you know, so the one thing that I did put out an apology for at our first meeting when we came back, that I was apologizing for not, even though we had talked about things like going to 2 years, I apologized that I had not sent the formal plan out. The combination of when committees ended and the break started and stuff I had to do during the break made that too difficult. But the one thing I did note, we did send, one thing was sent back to the council, in a sense, which is because it had gone through the entire process, which was a proposal that they had, a bill was submitted by Representative Lilly of the results of the recommendations of the council, and the bill went through to the Environment Committee. The bill was amended with an amendment that was that added a project that we thought the council hadn't properly considered, because we couldn't see any data, any evidence that they had received all the data on that proposal. So that was essentially sent. It was essentially sent back. There was another council meeting in between the time when that was done and now, and they not only didn't consider that, they then did counter to law and their policies, added a whole set of other projects to what they considered soaked up the bottom line before we got there. So the council did have a chance to rigorously consider something that the legislature had, that they considered once, the legislature thought they hadn't considered well enough, sent it back to them, but they paid no attention to it. So they didn't look at it, they didn't take a vote on it or anything else. So, you know, it's hard to say, so that I felt less guilty about not having sent this whole thing to them.
Madam Chair, I'm not familiar with the example you've cited, but I appreciate your explanation. And just want to make sure that the committee is aware of our concern, and we want to make sure that all projects funded will be open for the taking of game and fish. That's our primary
concern. Well, that's essentially what the Constitution requires, is that the Constitution requires as provided by law. And so, for example, one of the things that I've said since I live in downtown Minneapolis, that there is the possibility, and I actually live next to a park, there is a possibility that the duck that has, or goose that has lunch or breakfast in my park then gets flies on and gets taken in some further area where hunting is allowed. So, you know, I mean, part of the point that I have made is that the Mississippi Flyway, much of which goes through an area which is not, it's all open to fishing, I assume, is not open to the fire, to firearms, is one of the prime nature areas, not only in the city, the state, but the continent. And, you know, to say that we're not going to help out the parts of it that don't allow hunting doesn't make any sense in what I know of wildlife management and wildlife life. So, okay, Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just could ask the testifier. One of the projects, I'm going to ask him a question. One of the projects that you mentioned in your discussion was the Conservation Partners Grants Program, and it was, to be honest, I didn't really know much about that program, and after serving on it, you know, when you just hear that, you think, well, you know, it's a bunch of these grants, and, you know, what do they really do? But I think that was, it's one of the kind of hidden treasures, I think, that's in this whole bill, which is a bunch of these smaller grants going out to different groups. And I remember when the first time I went through the bill, I needed a lot of help scoring projects. I remember Representative Hansen said, that's a good thing. And then the staff helped me through at different point too, and they said, well, that's good. But you know, honestly, I didn't know much about it. I was wondering if you could kind of show it out or give a little shout out to a couple examples of where projects that are doing and how this has been a success.
Well, I'll tell you, you're probably talking to the right guy, because for the specific, or not the wrong guy, I'm sorry, but for the specifics of these various grant projects, it's kind of outside of my knowledge base, so I apologize for that. Okay. I'm sure there's plenty of people in the room who could.
I think to your left there's perhaps a dialer friend that might be able to help.
Yeah, here's my phoner friend guy here.
Page me upstairs here.
Please.
Hi, Madam Chair. Gary Botzik, Minnesota Conservation Federation. We, too, strongly support the Conservation Partners program that's run through the Department of Natural Resources, and that works best for my kind of members, who are small sportsmen's groups. So they find their matching money through banquets that you folks all attend, just like a DU one we had last night at the Kelly Inn. Thank you all for attending. But it's a very easy process. Application form has gotten better and better. It's not your multi-billion-dollar, million-dollar projects. It's 40 acres of WMA that happens to be a farmer that wants to sell that off. It's right next to an existing WMA. Little things like that. Planting trees, youth involvement in planting trees, shooting range improvements that are a very integral part of many sportsmen's clubs. And many of you have them in your district visit them or belong to them. Keep that up. But it helps our youth recruitment. It helps our natural resources management, and it's a very integral part of the Lasard SAMs. And Madam Chair, we thank you and Senator Representative Wagenius for having that money in that bill. Again, it's very important. And I just got an email from DNR this morning. Their process is open again it has been open, and it closes on May 15th. So another cycle. They go 2-3 cycles a year. So very important, and we hope and need to see that continue.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative, we'll continue with Lillard.
Madam Chair, and thank you for coming up, and thank you both. Just as state representatives, too, I think you can go back to your districts, and if you know of a sportsman group that needs a project, certainly seek this out, and they're out doing a lot of good work with this money. So.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you for that. And we do advertise that. We promote that. That's our role in our newsletters, on our website, so that our sportsmen know about that. I tell them, just don't apply for a 50-inch TV screen for your clubhouse. That would be inappropriate. keep it outside.
You mean the 50-inch TV?
No, I know.
Okay.
Get a snowmobile instead.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative McNamara. Questions for these people?
Madam Chair, I was thinking of the flat screen TVs that got taken out of the prisons, but sorry. Mr. Spreck, the chair has made a pretty strong case for 2-year funding, and truthfully, the continuation and a lot of projects are phase 2, phase 3, phase 4. The idea of 2-year funding is certainly one that deserves a good discussion and has a lot of merit. There may be, and she's followed a model that set some money aside for emerging issues. Has your group taken a position, or is it open to the idea of 2-year funding if it was with Lasard SAM's scrutiny and recommendations? In other words, the process would follow with Lasard SAMs, but they would do a 2-year advertisement and then a supplemental or whatever. Does your group have a position on that?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, thank you for that. We have not vetted this through our board, but my feeling is, based on what I've learned through this process, that we would, as long as it was done in such a way that the council was consulted and had approved a transition to a 2-year, and that we were able to address, which I believe we are able to address, the interim period between now and next year, and also that projects that are funded would have board approval. I don't see that we would have an issue with moving to a 2-year cycle. I understand the potential cost savings with bureaucracy and everything being as it is certainly may have a lot of merit. So,
okay, thank you. But I understand Mr. Ness is in, so since he signed up, we should get him up. Thank you very much. Oh, sorry, one more question?
No,
any more?
The gentleman over there.
What?
Sitting
on the side. No, Lance Ness was the one who signed up, so we need him on. Okay. Oh, before you start, Mr. Ness, Representative McDonald has gazed very carefully at the minutes, and he moves the minutes of April 3rd.
I'm on the list, yes.
Okay. All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lance Ness. I'm the president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance. I want to basically just keep my testimony short here and state that we would like to be part of the solution and not part of the problem. We stand ready to help any kind of compromise that will help this shift, and we want to all work towards that. I'm going to be a little facetious here, but I'm going to talk about Rocky and Bullwinkle and Frostbite Falls and Lake Wobegon. And those are traditional icons in Minnesota. But it also seems that we're not doing a lot to help Bullwinkle, but we're doing a lot to help Rocky. And we're forgetting about Frostbite Falls and Lake Wobegon. We knew that when we got into this, there was going to be a greater demand for natural resource funding than there was going to be money. And that's why we wanted a council in place to vet these projects, to get a good, get the most important projects and to recommend the funding to them to you, the legislature. And we feel the process is working well, very well. At the same time, we feel there's a divide between the legislative branch and the council. And it's not getting closer, it's getting wider. So I've come up with a slight suggestion for folks. The suggestion is, what if we had a project appeals committee and taking two of the legislators and two of the citizens to review the projects that did not get funded, and if needed, recommend that they be reviewed. We'd seek a vote of like 3-1 or 4-0. 2-2 would be a tie. They wouldn't be passed on again. And what we want to do is find a solution here, one that serves all the state and the people and not just any one segment, but part of our natural resources that need it the most. And let's not forget Frostbite Falls and Lake Wobegon and Rocky and Bullwinkle. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Ness. But I'll point out that I think in this bill, we've sort of set up that appeals process, except the appeals group is the legislature. I have again and again, when anyone has come up, you know, first of all, I will point out exactly that we funded totally every project that came through the council. So we didn't eliminate any council. We added some others as they added some others outside of the process. They didn't seem to be willing to review the ones that we added when they had a chance to. And I guess one of the one of the things that we're asking now, and we're looking, obviously the process goes on until the last day of the conference committee, but assuming that the bill passes the House, but the one of the things we're asking is, anyone who doesn't like what we've done, you know, who doesn't want that second year of funding, who says they absolutely need all of, in a few cases we might have divided the funding between 2 years because it looked as if it was an ongoing project, and, you know, if it's acquisition, you're very likely not to finish. You know, they all continued further on. You know, please come and tell us, and we will take off that second year. You know, we will complete, and, you know, we'll put it back in. Obviously, it's legacy. As I said, we've left $33 million back in the Lessard Sams Commission. So if anyone who doesn't want that second year, tell us. We'll take it away. We'll either give it to some project that wants it. This is the legislature. We are the ones who do the final decisions on that. Or if that doesn't work, we'll just put it back in the Lessard Sams balance, and they'll have that much more to do the next year. But so far, I don't know, except kind of, you know, it seemed to me that Ms. Adner was saying that she wanted us to do that, but I think I'd rather have a more formal statement from the Nature Conservancy that that's what they want. But no one has come in and told me that. Or told, let me say, put it more broadly, told the committee that. but we're perfectly willing to listen to that. Representative McDonald? Unless, Mr. Ness, you have any?
Nope.
Okay. Representative McDonald?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just regarding what you had stated, I'm just in reviewing Mr. Noble's audit of the legacy amendment and educating myself on particularly the Lessard-Sams and seeing the importance of the council, my gosh, to seek their advice and expertise, of course, should be our guiding post, our lighthouse, if you will. So I'm curious on the projects that are in the bill, and I'm learning and reading about them now, Madam Chair, and I do recognize that each one that you were very deliberate and thoughtful in putting in the bill. Of the projects that are presented to the council, they have to vote, 9 out of the 12 members have to vote in favor of each project, and of course this with great scrutiny. How many of the projects that are in the bill did they vote on and recommend that we fund?
The vast majority, almost all of them, because we did every one that they had voted and recommended for. I don't think is it a majority vote on some of them, or what? Is it no? What? How does it work?
What is it?
I thought
it's not an inch on the over.
Ms.
Madam Chair, members, the nine vote requirement is on the entire package. Yeah. They don't individually vote on each project.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, so then out of the entire package,
I want this package to be unanimous out of this committee.
I know you do. Yes.
So
out of that package,
standards.
Is that then what it was? Because of course we hear some concerns that they didn't have necessarily a lot of some of the recommendations weren't presented in the bill. Is that still the case? Or I know we're in the process of vetting it and amending it.
And the Lessard-Sams, I'm not sure any.
Am I inaccurate on that? Then?
What? Oh, there are things that didn't go to the council. Yes, but I don't think that there anything that wasn't vetted here or in the Environment Committee or. I don't. But one of my, I think what the effect of my proposal is to giving the council much more time and space and energy to do what I think is often more important than the pre-vetting, which is the oversight, which is, I think, what the legislative orders report has also criticized, that there isn't enough of that. And so instead of shuffling papers, twice as many papers for the second year, they get to go out and look at those projects. They get to look at the reports from the projects. They get to think if any of them need to be tweaked, as opposed to the effort that goes into writing a new proposal. So
Madam Chair?
Well, the two new things, there were new things that we did put in. But as I said, they were all very well vetted. One was the MALPIS project, which is the Forest for the Future. That's the one which kind of follows the procedure that we use for the Blandon lands, where we looked at acquiring easements and so leaving it in private property. And so that's and then the other one was the carp barriers, or the invasive species. We put in a big chunk of money that was not reviewed by the council, but I think before that's expended, there'll be ample time to renew it. And I haven't heard again anybody in the legislature. People have come to me and told me they want the language in that tweak because it doesn't give them enough freedom, and that's exactly what we're going to look at doing. But I haven't heard anyone in the legislature come and tell me that we don't want to do anything more on invasive species.
Madam Chair, okay, thank
you're
you.
You're going to tell me that?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
Finishing then, under those particular projects that didn't go through the council, did they still go by the guiding principles, those particular projects that we see on page 16?
But the Constitution, more than.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
and is that?
And they're doing things that we've done before, and they're doing, again, for the MALPIS project, you might talk to the legislators in that area who might have a little bit more information on it, like Bach and Tomasoni and Dill could possibly give you some more information on that project. And the council spent a lot of time on invasive species. They just didn't fund it. And all the plans after the set, it's going to work kind of the way LCCMR works. The plans that they do will go back to the council for approval after the session. So I think they're going to have more input than they've had before just because they'll have more time to do it.
So, Madam Chair, so then based upon that, those statements, then those particular projects will be transparent, understandable, and accessible to the public comment and review.
Yeah.
And protecting the
they're on our website
public interest
right now.
And so on. Okay.
And they must be because I've already gotten comments and suggestions on them.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. So a general question. I know there are people in the audience who have said that they want to testify tomorrow. And so for any group who's going to be testifying tomorrow, or anybody, we'd like to ask, does any of the funding splits cause a programmatic problem to your problem? And is there any case where we've given you extra funding that the Lasard Sam's Council didn't give you that you feel you cannot use it and you would rather have us put it back to the Lasard Sam's Council? That's just to the, because I know there are people here who've asked to testify tomorrow. Okay.
Madam.
Yes? You want, come, say a few words.
Is there somebody, did you know if there's somebody waiting there?
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Kerr. You're there. What? What? Okay. Are you both together?
No, we just happened to hop up here at the same time, in the interest of time.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is John Curry. I'm Associate Director with the Minnesota Land Trust, and I just want to share a few comments if I could. Thank you. With over 75% of the lands in the state in private ownership, we are very proud and humbled to be a partner with the state in its coordinated conservation plans to restore and preserve shorelines on private property, prairies and grasslands, wetlands, and forested landscapes. We are a partner with Bowser, with the DNR, with the MPCA, with other nonprofits, and 444 landowners across the state in delivering these statewide conservation plans. In the bill that's before you, we are a part of the Root River Restoration Project, the Grasslands for the Future, Critical Shorelines 2, Wetland Habitat Program, and the Metropolitan Big Rivers 4 Program. We thank you very much for recognizing us as a partner in this bill, and we have also provided some language to committee staff that would help annualize some of the sub-awards in those major award agreements where the award was, or the appropriation was made whole in the second year, but the sub-awards were not necessarily recognized. So that information is before you right now. As the bill currently stands, there are two areas that I just want to highlight for your consideration. The first one has to do with the biennial rather than the annual appropriation, and I'll get to that in just a minute. The second is Section 5, Subdivision 20, and that section on the very back of the bill that I was able to acquire yesterday, I believe, Section 5, Subdivision 20, that requires DNR commissioner approval for all interest in property. Now, just so that folks realize, it's not just an acquisition, it's also an easement in property, which is our tool in trade. And an easement in property, it also means supporting staff funding that goes for that project or for monitoring in subsequent years. All of those would have to be approved by the DNR commissioner. The legislative auditor said that that should take place at a certain threshold. They identified $500,000. But we're concerned that a number of our landowners who may be donating an easement, a 100% charitable contribution, and they're working with a third-party nonprofit, because a portion of our monitoring staff in years to come might be paid for with Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Fund dollars, that the DNR commissioner, maybe a DNR commissioner who doesn't agree with some of our interests in these properties, that that person would be able to unilaterally make a decision. And the landowner is somebody that we work with for years. We want to make sure that we're able to make these decisions more quickly than that. So I want folks to realize that that's a concern for us, but we are working with the authors that brought that forward, and hopefully we can get that taken care of.
Well, let me show you. The first thing you said we're already working on. For the second thing, we'll take any suggestions that you have and certainly look at them.
Okay, thank you. I just want to say on the annual versus biennial funding,
We do prefer the annual funding, and I want to give one case in point to illustrate. But basically, in the world of appropriating to agencies, everybody is used to two-year funding cycles. I think that's much less a concern than a nonprofit agency who lives and dies by grants and private funding, annual events, and things of that nature. For us, a nonprofit like us has to coordinate projects, timing, partner, funding sources, and on-the-ground conservation delivery. I want to give you a reference to our St. Louis River Restoration Project, which is right now $11.4 million, $3.4 million of which came from the Outdoor Heritage Fund, but that was 2012. We're not in this bill before you. The other partners that we managed to get together are all annual funders, and it includes the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, the Great Lakes Legacy Act, the Great Lakes Coastal Wetlands Restoration Program, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Environmental Contaminants Program, the Marine Debris Removal Program, the Great Lakes Restoration Program, three NOAA grants, the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, and the EPA. We also have received private funding, also annual grants, from the Duluth Superior Community Foundation, the Lloyd K. Johnson Foundation, Healing Our Waters, corporations such as Minnesota Power and Enbridge. And when piecing these various grant proposals together, it's very important, especially for the federal partners, that they know you have match in hand. They require at least one-to-one match. The Outdoor Heritage Funds have been terrific. They are awesome dollars in the use of acquiring those federal dollars. And in this case, as I said, we've already achieved almost 3-to-1 in federal and private grant leveraging, but those are easier to attain on an annual grant cycle. In the interest of time, I'll just make my point on that, which is that you talked about a longer grant being better, and I think we would agree with that. The duration of an Outdoor Heritage Fund grant typically is 3 years, but you can apply every 1 year. The time period can be 3, 4, or 5 years, but being able to apply for the grants every year has been important to us.
Mr. Curry, you said you're not in this bill, so I guess I don't get to ask you the question of if you're in the bill and spread over 2 years, would you want us to cut you out?
Madam Chair, we're a partner in 5 areas in the bill, and okay. We appreciate the recommendations of the council, and we appreciate your bill, too. And looking at the second year, we would want to be a part of any conservation that fits our mission that you would ask us to be a partner with.
Well, if you're asking, I guess then the same question that I asked of Ms. Ladner. If you're asking us to go back to the annual appropriations of the Lessard Council, and in the cases where we've extended the appropriations to some of your partners, are you asking that we cut that appropriation out and return it to the Lessard Council so they can appropriate it on an annual basis?
No, I'm not, Madam Chair. My testimony is that we have always thought that an independent council looking deeply into these environmental concerns and coordinating them has been an important component of it. If that process is changing and you want us to be a part of a new process in the future, provided it fits our conservation mission and we've got the funding, we would love to be a partner in that process.
Okay. Mr. Hansen, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I know you're running out of time. Mr. Curry, good to see you. On your point on the annual appropriations, and at the last council meeting, we moved to put emphasis on requests for proposals for those areas affected by silica sand mining and aquatic invasive species in the request for proposal. So it seems that in this discussion of annual versus biennial, the rationale for the annual is that you are able to pivot to areas of emerging concern. And the last 4 years, there hasn't been really an additional emphasis. Is that the type of thing that you're commenting on or looking at, that the council should be reacting to new issues or emerging issues in its RFPs?
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, I hope these comments help your question. We are working with a number of landowners in the southeastern part of the state that are interested in conservation easements and are coordinating with one another as neighbors in doing conservation easements. And one of the things that they are looking at is the threat that would come to their way of life from significant mining operations. At this point in time, we do not have any state funding to be working with those folks. It's just strictly out of our private funds that we've been able to raise. So that would be an issue that we'd be interested in looking at, and the sooner the better. Thank you.
Okay. We just have a couple of minutes or less, so we need to get to the next person. So
yes, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, my name is John Lencheski. I'm with Minnesota Trout Unlimited. And given the time, I guess I've just sat here a little confused. I didn't realize there was an amendment yet on the table there had been introduced. I just want to touch on the possible problems with the appropriation that had been recommended, all in fiscal year 14 being split and some of it being in 2015. Just to explain, we do habitat projects on trout streams. Our work season by state law, basically you have to end by September 15th, and we can't begin until in the spring. So when we put in our proposal, the intent is, say for this current round, because the appropriation wouldn't come until July, we would then have to do our design and contracting, and typically this would be planning to let the contracts actually enter into the contracts for construction work in 2014. If the appropriation is split at July 1st, those funds which are in which become available after July of 2014, I don't think that we could encumber those in a contract. So unless the committee is suggesting they're such they're going to double our appropriation and give us the same amount in both years, it could be problematic. It would probably delay a number of projects. We obviously don't want to lose any funding. We love the partnership with the state, but it would be problematic. And
we'll have to look and see exactly how the appropriations work. I think on a 2-year basis, you're guaranteed the money way before. You know, if you have to wait till we have another appropriation sessions, then we have another bill that doesn't take effect until May or something. This way, it's all in place for, you know, at least through the biennium. And of course, there's something about carrying funds over through it that I'm not totally familiar with. Okay. But I think the less often you have to come back for new funding, the better it works for construction seasons. But, you know, we obviously have to look project by project.
So yeah, I'll have to look at the amendment. Okay. And has that been introduced? I was a little confused. Yes. Has an amendment been introduced that
yes,
has the biennium?
Yes, it's on the... It's out on the table, I think.
Okay. Thank you,
and
Madam
it's
Chair.
On the website also.
Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes?
Just a quick question. And Mr. Lencheski, I think this is an area that's been one of the successes for Minnesota, and maybe you could tell about it with the real quickly about the trout industry and the tourism that brings in and with legacy money and others, but just 30 seconds. And I know you're doing a lot of trout fishing right in Dakota County, right by Representative Hansen's house, but around the state. So how many tourists are coming in, and what are you able to do with?
Yeah, just, Madam Chair.
Mr. Lencheski.
Just briefly, it is an incredibly, it's a growing industry, if you will, a clean, sustainable industry, just in the southeastern part of the state and neighboring Wisconsin, Iowa. They've been a study. It's in the neighborhood of about $1 billion a year of economic activity generated by just trout fishing in this area. So, great green industry. Lots of local contractors doing the restoration work. These are great projects. Great economic benefits. So, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Any other quick comments? Otherwise, we'll see you all tomorrow at noon. Meeting adjourned.